Welcome to today's South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations conference call. Participation in this call is by expressed invitation of SDAHO only. Unauthorized participants and or any party that aids and abets such unauthorized participants may be subject to criminal and civil penalties under both state and federal law. Please disconnect from the call if SDAHO did not expressly invite your participation. A question and answer session will follow the presentation, and instructions for asking questions will be given at that time. Thank you all for your attention. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Ms. Deborah Owen.
Thank you so much. Welcome, everyone, and glad you have made the call and made time today to talk about legislative issues, both state and federal. Today, we're going to kick it off with state first, as we have ended our main run for legislative session. And veto day is March 27th. However, we aren't aware of any vetoes that will be occurring. Most of our bills have been signed by the governor already, but the vetoes that would affect health care legislation. We know there are some rumors of gun bills that may be vetoed by the governor. So let's overview the main run, which is, again, legislative days in a calendar year is about 40 legislative days for our Constitution. It can't exceed that, so the main run is always less than 40, allowing for the possibility of perhaps a day or two extra throughout the year, including veto day. The Public Policy Council took a position on 40 bills of the 388 bills that were dropped this year. Also remember that a number of those bills weren't up for consideration by the Public Policy Council, but they have, we have other bills that we are always watchful of, such as the highly IM-22 bills after they repealed the IM-22 law with House Bill 1069. In those bills, we are ever watchful because, of course, even though they're not maybe directly related to health care, we have to ensure that our advocacy efforts in the future are compliant with the law. So back to the Public Policy Council's 40 bills. Of those bills, about 18 bills we've supported, and we had, including the budget of that 0.3%, we lost two of the bills that we had supported. One was really just came out of an interim summer study. It had to do with workforce for CNAs. There really wasn't much support in the Department of Health, and there really wasn't any dollars available this year also. So that was the reason why that failed. And the other one was actually would have doubled the vehicle liability insurance. It was kind of a long shot as well. It's been tried years in the past, but we worked hard for those efforts and to no avail. It's just not their time yet. I'm sure we'll see those things down the road. Of the eight bills that were opposed by the Public Policy Council, the only bill that we lost there was the midwifery bill. Of course, as many of you know from past calls and then legislative forums, we did anticipate the loss of the midwifery bill in part because the Department of Health and the Board of Nursing drafted that legislation for Debbie Pease and her group. That was certainly a big nail in the coffin to begin. But I can say to the effort of our health systems advocacy team and SDAHO, we did work with Debbie Pease to put measures in the bill draft prior to it being dropped that would help protect moms and babies and our members as well. Our members, our main concerns, of course, are liability for decisions made outside of the hospital that could be a part of a lawsuit down the road once the mother enters the hospital. And then the second main key element there that we had in the bill was to ensure that midwives, which will now be called certified professional midwives after July 1st, those will be not able to practice within the four walls of the hospital. We also monitor a number of bills in part because sometimes we know they could be dangerous or they may get amended down the road, or perhaps we were opposed to a bill such as Senate Bill 144, which was a gun bill, and then we changed our position to neutral later once the Section 2 of the bill that was actually very harmful for hospitals was removed. So of all of those bills that we advocated for on behalf of our members, we had an overall score of 93%. That's very good. And remember that the legislature meets for about 37 days, and of those days, we have to get those 40 bills through at least one committee and through each house. And so it keeps it for a pretty busy time for all of us, though we're very happy to be advocating for on your behalf for health care. I'll also talk a little bit about some other bills that you may are familiar with, the general budget. I know we had the ELEG talk about that recently. There's a 0.3% for community-based providers only. That does not include hospitals, docs, dentists, chiropractors, and others, but it does include some of those folks in 2011 whose budgets were cut with Medicaid and were never really fully restored. So that 0.3% or about $1.5 million will be divided into that lot. Teachers also received a 0.3%, and then the state employees will receive a 0.3%. That actually won't go toward the state employee's salary. It'll go toward their health plan benefit. But if you want those details, they are in the last e-ledge, and also you can just email me, and I'll be happy to send you the information about how those dollars break out. In addition, we had some bills for improving workforce. There was the passage of the Healthcare Recruitment Assistance Program and Rural Healthcare Facility Recruitment Assistance Program. That was just a little under $1 million in financial support. The passage of a bill for the oversight of tech schools, allowing them to more nimbly respond to workforce needs in their communities. And again, this actually was required as something to be done by the legislature after the passage of Constitutional Amendment R in November of last year. In addition, the emergency medical responders, or EMRs, were added to personnel for ambulance transport in the effort to provide sustainability in ambulance service. EMRs will function in an assistant role to those EMTs, and EMRs now require only one-third of the training that an EMT would provide. And there is a hope amongst those in the emergency medical responder area that this would be an opportunity for perhaps folks who may not want to, who are interested in doing this job but not having the rigorous requirements of the EMT, they might be willing to step into an EMR role. Also, there was a physical therapist flexibility or a physical therapist bill that provided flexibility for initial visits with patients in rural areas. And I can give you more details on that, but it's probably a little long to explain to you right now if that affects your area. Hospital owner insurance plans were under attack this year. There was efforts actually much before session by the Health System Advocacy Group starting in the summer to actually request by the drafters that the bill would not be dropped. Eventually, though, we had to kill it in committee. It was a 13-0 vote. And then, of course, talking about certified professional midwives, just so you know, there will be rules coming forward with that over the next few months. Again, the law doesn't take effect till July 1. The governor appoints their independent board, and there's no appropriation with that because they do have a donor. We don't know for sure who the name is, or I would share it, who will put up the first $20,000 to run that independent board on their behalf. In post-acute care, we had a number of bills, in part because we had the summer, two-thirds of the summer interim studies focused on post-acute care in one form or another. So there was a defeat of bills to either allow for the transfer and sale of nursing home beds or the reversion of those nursing home beds back to the Department of Health. Defeat of a bill that would have restricted private businesses from being able to charge for goods and services above the Medicaid rate by enacting Medicaid equalization. Passage of providing a long-term care option of community living homes that would support one or two, four unrelated adults who reside in an independent residential living home. And then also passage of a nursing home in Eagle Butte. And the Eagle Butte nursing home did not take from the moratorium. They actually had beds put aside from a vote bill in 2005. And so we just really, what the legislature did was really just reauthorize those beds that were allotted to Eagle Butte from the previous years. In terms of curbing prescription drug use, there was the passage of intensive meth treatment services funding of about $600,000. And then also there was the passage of the prescription drug monitoring program's integration of the central repository of electronic health records to allow health systems, pharmacies, or health information exchanges to seamlessly access data. And for those of you who attended our legislative forums, this was a big concern early on. This was a summer study bill, and at one point in time, there was a bill, a drop that would have been punitive toward docs, removing their civil liability if they were not registered. With some strong advocacy efforts on our part and with the Department of Health and with the support of the interim summer committee, we were able to kill one bill and then and resurrect this bill. It was Senate Bill 1 to provide for good guidance but not punitive toward our docs. And then lastly, there was just some other bills I'm just going to share one or two on. There was a defeat of a bill that would have capped the maximum rate of interest on debt arising out of medical services to more than 4% annually. That was easily defeated in committee. In addition, there was a Chief Supreme Court Justice. I had brought a bill which has to do with mental health procedures in the criminal justice program. That is a lengthy bill, and it will take actually effect upon signage by the governor. So there are some good things, though, for our mental health care providers in terms of education of sheriffs and ensuring that we're treating people who need to be treated and not locking them up. And that's what I'll wrap up and hand over to you, Scott. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Deborah, and we'll definitely have some time for questions. And as we conclude the state session, and now let's move into the federal update. And of course, right now, all of the focus is really on the American Health Care Act, the repeal and repair of the ACA. But a little bit on the calendar first. So the Congress is in session now through April 7th, that first week in April, and then they'll go into recess for the week of the 10th and the 17th for Easter holiday. Back the last week of April, and then some timelines in the calendar that they need to address in addition to the dedicated work around the ACA repeal and repair replace. The debt limit will be reached, as many of you know, tomorrow, March 15th, and that would need to be addressed through an Appropriations Act by April 28th. So expect to see work on that the first week in April along with the other activity. And then, of course, the nomination of Supreme Court candidate Neil Gorsuch will be addressed before the end of April, and that'll likely be the last week. So they'll need to deal with the continuing resolution and the Supreme Court nominee in April in addition to the other activity. Our hope overall, as you'll hear our messaging, is that Congress takes some more time and slows down the advancement of the AHCA. And right now, of course, the weather is helping a little bit in D.C. as they're under a storm and hope everyone is safe, but it is causing some delays. Long-term on the calendar, it looks like what the House leadership, Republican leadership, is that they would finish their work. I'll talk about this in a little more detail, the week of the 27th of April or April 3rd, and then move it out of the House for consideration in the Senate. Again, as we said, that April 7th deadline before the break becomes a possible advantage if they aren't able to complete all of the work on the proposed legislation. We get a chance to visit more with our congressional delegation when they're back home, and we're going to talk about that. So with the introduction and the work now on the AHCA, the pace is definitely quickening. Yesterday, the CBO released scoring, and just some high points on the numbers include on coverage, which is a really high focal point of ours, as it impacts our members in the state and across the country. Estimated 14 million would move to the uninsured ranks by next year. And then the big number for us is out to 2024, 24 million would move to uninsured. And although you hear a lot and are reading a lot about the way those estimates either, you know, work in favor of whether your position is supporting or against to support the position, the truth is those are real lives. And so we're really focused in on the 24 million, and that's out to 2024, which, again, is out there a number of years, but in reality is not that far out. On the dollar side, an estimated $337 billion can be saved or would be saved in the current form under current law, and $880 billion would be reduced due to the tax reductions. This is predominantly because of the repeal of the individual mandate and the requirements of businesses to pay if they don't provide insurance. A number to also keep in mind when we're talking about stats is that we would move back as a country to more than 52 million uninsured by the year 2026, which would represent a new high of uninsured, where we've made, of course, substantial gains over the last several years in that uninsured number. So now on with where we're at, and for more information, we will be putting together and releasing to all of the members later today or early tomorrow a set of talking points where we're coming from given the information that we have. And our position, of course, as we said, really hasn't changed. We're step in step with our partners at Leading Age and AHA and others in opposition, predominantly and primarily because of the coverage lost, but also because of the steep financial impact as a result of these proposed changes. So working with them, we will prioritize talking points and send them out. SDAHO will send letters to our congressional delegation Now, Representative Noem has indicated a strong support for this, and we will continue to work with she and her staff to share our messaging. And because the effort to move it to the Senate is still underway and it will take on a little different light there, we'll continue to tailor our messaging to Senator Rounds and Senator Thune. Now, again, we need numbers a little bit because in that initial $14 million, that stands and represents, you know, that individual and business side. So initially, it's going to be that people choose, and they have the right to choose when these changes, if they go through, to not get insurance. And so we don't really want to use as much that 2018 number as making our case, and you'll hear that in the messaging points, as we want to use the number $24 million. It's more powerful because it uses a combined, both individual and business, and then those where coverage is not affordable any longer, or those that are challenged or underserved or under in the most vulnerable community population. So coverage is our highest priority in messaging. And as a reminder, on the calendar, how this is going to run through, the House Budget Committee will be addressing by tomorrow or by Friday. There is some challenges in the House that they have because the conservatives and the various factions are not in favor of an Obama light or in some of the provisions that are there. So remember, there's 431 members in the House right now because of some appointees to the cabinet and open positions. So 216 votes needed to pass. No Dems will support this, so 21 votes are needed there, and we are working with our national partners on those 21. Of course, Kristi Noem or Representative Noem would be one potential of the 21. At this point, we don't know if that's possible. So if it does hypothetically reach passage in the House, they're hoping for that by the 24th, possibly extending out to the end of the month, and then, as I said, it would move over to the Senate the week of the 27th or April 3rd. In the 7th, 11 senators have come out and are challenging different aspects of what is the current bill. And remember there, the numbers are much tighter. Only two are needed to be able to, you know, cause potential either non-passage or major changes to the bill as a result of opposition. So it's going to be a lot harder to thread the needle in the Senate. Some are saying it's not possible, but as we've said here in the office and in talking amongst the groups, there's a lot of momentum and a lot of desire to push this through as well. Our best opportunity then, continue to work on the House, but also in the Senate given the numbers. And don't ignore likely that the governors, in especially the 33 Republican states, will likely weigh in with their priorities. And we're hearing that that could happen as soon as the next couple of days. And they have significant influential power as well. So on the whole, American Healthcare Act and the ACA repeal, repair, replace, watch for those talking points. We're going to ask for your help in getting the message out and to continue to stay diligent because slowing down and having more time for deliberation here is really our message, and we believe it's the best course of action. And by the way, it has worked up till now. Now, a couple other things in the federal news, and then we'll move on to questions. We have, of course, the updated President Trump travel ban, which actually was much more focused and tailored in its new version. It now includes 6 countries instead of 7. Now, we're still hearing that there's some legal challenges possible. We'll continue to monitor it, but it's likely that that will stand. Now, remember, that had a 90-day or so duration as the Trump administration continues to work on the overall issue of immigration and the related topics. For healthcare, especially, this is a big issue in terms of healthcare workers and education and other connected programs. Also, there was an executive order that was released yesterday, got very little attention. We are still looking at it, but in general, what it is it's looking at the way government is possibly be streamlined, and so President Trump has said, let's take a look at all departments and all agencies, and you need to come forward as a leader of that, including the new appointees, and say what in your and those department and agencies can be adjusted, I'll say reduced, streamlined, or possibly cut out. So stay tuned for that. And then finally, and if we've been tracking this closely, of course, nominee Seema Verman for administrator of CMS was confirmed finally by the full Senate late last night. So expect that she'll begin work immediately to fill open positions, and then the efforts will increase to focus on what we want to work on, especially regulatory relief, amongst other things. So with that in mind, I'm going to stop and I will open it up for questions. Operator, if you wouldn't mind, see if there's any questions, please.
Thank you. At this time, we will begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, press 0 followed by a 1 on your touchtone phone. Questions will be answered in the order they are received. If you have a question, press 0 followed by a 1 now. Please hold for a moment as our system compiles your responses. And it appears that our first question comes from Deb Fisher-Clemens. Please go ahead, Deb.
Dave, hey, hi, thanks, Deb. Scott. I have a couple of questions, if you don't mind.
Please.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Did I understand you to say that Noam is part of the 21 that would vote against this? Because she already voted for it in committee.
No, sorry. I said, thanks for let me clarify. I said it was, at this point, we didn't think it was likely we'd be able to change her vote, so she wouldn't be included in on the 21,
okay,
although we would keep messaging.
Okay. Secondly, one of the things that I keep reading is that everybody talks about coverage, and certainly that would be our concern. But what I hear members and the president saying is they're going to improve access because of decreased cost. Somehow we have to message that decreased coverage does not improve access, and that access doesn't just happen without coverage, and that we've got to get our hospital message out there better, I think. And so that's just a thought, because I keep reading about this access is going to improve. Well, only if the hospitals can stay open. And then have you, Sadaho, gotten numbers from AHA specific to our state on what any of this would mean to us specifically?
Well, actually, they're asking us to, would we be able to compile and report back where we've seen the state impact? So we are working on that as we speak. And
okay,
thanks for the clarification on the access and coverage, because that will be part of what we'll want to put into the messaging to clarify that. And we do have some numbers, Deb, but that's kind of the big challenge. But I will tell you, when we put this draft together, we're going to share it with everyone so we can talk about it. We'll include as much as we can on state-specific numbers.
Okay. And I did just send Deborah a letter that the Tennessee Hospital Association has sent to their delegation. Pretty strongly worded. It's, I think, good, and using some of their examples might be helpful in some of our messaging. I think it's pretty strong as to how it impacts hospitals and our concern about coverage. So I did share that
wonderful
with Deborah.
Yep.
And then
wonderful. Thank
just
you.
One additional, yep, one additional thought, and thanking Deborah for all of her hard work out in PEER, keeping us all on track and online, and I think she understated the work that she did in the sense of 40 bill total. There's a lot more to that, I think, than just talking about a 40 bill and the support or opposition. That's a whole lot of reading. That's a whole lot of looking at amendments. That's a whole lot of committee meetings, and always having to be there because you're going to get questions, and always having to be present and accounted for because they're looking for you to ask you how something impacts you. So I just want to make sure that we underscore, because I've been very thankful for all of the emails that she sends out, because it saves me sending out emails because I can just forward hers to my folks. So I think it was a very busy session, and I think there was a lot of threats to healthcare in some of the legislation that we saw, and I think we have to be really thankful that we didn't see some horrible things happen to healthcare because of the work that all of us did, but really Deborah was leading our charge. So I just want to say thanks.
Well, yeah, we got our thumbs up here, and thank you for doing that, because we certainly concur. It is, you know, sometimes it's the silent part around the efforts, but then the loud vocal part to say thanks that really pays the biggest dividends. And I do think in this environment we're in, that's well stated. There's many, many kind of sharks in the water, and just because they didn't come up doesn't mean there wasn't a whole lot of effort put into it. We had this very discussion this morning, and so thank you so eloquently for saying it to Deborah, and on behalf of the whole systems advocacy group from me and our team here, it goes right back to you. But we're not just patting ourselves on the back. A lot of good work. We'll see in the summary. It's a good transition. But the summary, we hit again at 93% on all of the positions that the board and the public policy took. Last year it was 96, and those things don't happen without all of that collective work that you just described very well. So kudos, and thanks again to Deborah for her efforts. Okay, so operator, other questions?
As a reminder to our audience, you may ask a question by pressing 01 now. And our next question comes from Jay Jennings. Please go ahead, Jay.
Hi, Jay. Check your mute, Jay.
Take off your mute. Thank you very much, Scott. Thank you very much, Deb. Say, a question for both of you. Dennis Dugard was recently quoted, I believe earlier today, that he is not like the new healthcare plan because there's more risk associated under the proposed funding changes for Medicaid. Now, he goes on to say that it's important that we get control of the federal deficit, but he went on to say that the open-ended federal entitlement is going to be completely different if they have a per capita cap. Do we have any sort of quantitative numbers on this that tell us what kind of a hit we would take if it went to a per capita cap?
Well, that's exactly where we're working, Jay, and you've got those governor quotes are what we're hearing as well. So that'll be part of Deborah's point and to Deb Fisher-Clement's point on what we can include. I'll just say there's still a lot we don't know, but what's happening right now, and there's a lot, the pace has quickened, but I expect that Governor Dugard will has weighed in when he was most recently in D.C. and met with both Secretary Price and other members of the folks leading the charge on the leadership of the Republican side. And so that is key. So what we'll do is we'll share the data that we have. It's a little hard to get into it here on the phone, but once we release it, then I would welcome for us, anyone on our team, Deborah, me, Gil, Jen, or whoever, to be able to respond back to the details. But we'll go with what we know right now, and we'll give you what we've got, okay?
That's a fair answer. Thank you so much for everything.
Yeah, absolutely, and thanks for the understanding of stuff being in flux. Because, for instance, I will just share with you as an example. So we hit, 29,000 or so that are enrolled in under the exchange in South Dakota. That was actually a little tick up, the increase from last year. So we'll be able to talk about that number, and if you put that into coverage against the other numbers that are being estimated out, but how much of those, as I said, being careful, are related to the individual or business side of the repeal that's going to come, or will be longer term to the population that's underserved and can't afford it. So that's where we got to be careful about how we use the numbers and then quantify them against South Dakota specific data. Thanks, Jay. Other questions?
It appears that there are no further questions at this time.
Okay, so thank you, operator. And again, thanks to everyone. Just a couple of final comments. So with Deborah's conclusion and then the wrap-up, we will be meeting later this month and completing a full summary of the state session. A lot of that's looking retrospectively, but a lot of it will be leaning toward a prospective look already at the issues that are being teed up, some of those that we want to be very careful about that Deb Fisher-Clement alluded to. But also there's some some summer studies and some other groups that will be meeting throughout the off-session time. But really, already in preparation for the 93rd session with the summary. In addition, we're preparing and completing the federal issues brief. And with that, this year we're making some changes to our documentation that we will be leading the charge in D.C. So we'll have folks, Jen Porter will be heading out with a couple of the members to PEAK, which is the annual leading age meeting in D.C. And then, of course, that'll be later in this month, the 20th through the 22nd, 23rd, and then AHA's annual meeting will be the first part of May. And those messaging points will be updated and shared with all of the membership as well. And then, just as a reminder, we've had this call throughout the state session and given the federal activity, but we said we would bring this to a conclusion, and that is our plan right now, that this would be our last call pending where things go on the federal side. However, we would love to hear from you if there is a desire to continue it. I mean, it's certainly, we want to be respectful of your time and the value of the updates and those things. So we're going to conclude the calls as of today. We'll send out a reminder of this along with the recording, and then we'll kind of monitor it and stay tuned because we'll bring the call back as the activity warrants it, either out of D.C. or from a state perspective. We thank you all again for your attendance, and with that, we'll conclude the call for today.
Thank you all for your attention. This concludes today's conference call. All participants may now disconnect.